Hi, my name is Christian.
And I'm Jose. And this is Coffee Break, a podcast about all things coffee.
Hey, Jose.
Hey, Christian.
What are we talking about today?
Today, we're going to be continuing our Diving Into Specialty series that we started an episode ago, or 2 weeks ago. Like I said at the end of last episode, we're going to be starting to dive into kind of the equipment or what you might want to get if you're going to start maybe kind of upping your coffee game. And I know we're calling it specialty, but this really applies to any coffee you make, whatever we're going to discuss here. We'll get into some nifty little devices that we haven't covered before, some that may be a little too familiar to everyone, and then we'll kind of see where that takes us. But I guess before we get started, Christian, what have you been up to in coffee lately?
Yeah, so I mentioned last time that I had ordered some 100% Robusta beans from Wynn Coffee Supply. And I know I also mentioned that I would share those with you, but I've not gotten around to doing that. I know. It's funny because we live so much closer nowadays, like just within 10, 15 minutes of each other. And it's still quite a struggle to kind of get through the day and stop by. Anyway, so that's what I'm going to share today, is talking about the 100% Robusta beans. Firstly, when I first opened the bag, I was surprised by how different the beans look. You know, you've seen Arabica beans, or you and I and other people have seen Arabica beans all over the place. You see them on TV, you see them in icons, like it's typically an Arabica bean that's being used. Like even our own Coffee Break podcast logo uses an Arabica bean. And the Robusta beans look different, and they're a little bit smaller, it seems. Anyway, so that's one of the things that caught me. I was like, oh, these beans look different. So that shows how inexperienced I am with the difference between Robusta and Arabica that I paused because I was like, wait a second, this looks really weird. So that's part of it. And also, I realized that maybe the company that I'd purchased from, they don't necessarily do some sort of like specialty work with the beans. I don't even know if you can call Robusta, if that type of bean has some sort of specialty designation to it. I just assumed that all coffee beans could fall into specialty. I don't know yet. I'm going to find out. Anyway, so the other thing that caught me when I opened the bag, besides the look of the beans, is that the roast was kind of varied in color. So some were quite dark, some were quite light. I don't know if that's because Robusta roasts differently or not. But if I were to look at a bag of Arabica beans and I saw a large variety in the roast of each of the beans, then that to me would be curious. I don't necessarily know yet if that's a bad thing. Typically, I think it's a bad thing, but who knows? So that was another thing. But the flavor of the beans, in the ways that I've tried so far. So I tried them in French press. I also tried them in espresso. You know, they're not terrible. The coffee that came out of it definitely felt more astringent. So they kind of dried my tongue out a little bit more than I would expect from like what I normally do with regular Arabica beans. But it could also be that I brewed them incorrectly. So that's another maybe different part about, or different element to 100% Robusta versus the Arabica beans. Perhaps they're more astringent. I'm not sure. I'll compare. I'll do some research online and find out. But yeah, that's kind of it so far. I wouldn't say they're terrible. And I don't know if it's because I was researching Robusta beans, but I also saw an ad from Blue Bottle where they were promoting 100% Robusta, and kind of touching on this same, you know, conventional wisdom, the current conventional wisdom that Robusta is bad. I think they're trying to change people's minds about that as well. So I found that pretty interesting. Aside from that, I think that's kind of it in terms of what I've been up to in coffee lately.
So just kind of did a little search here. The one that you got was the True Grit.
No, I got the Hanoi from Wynn Coffee Supply.
Hanoi. Okay, hold on.
Yeah, so it's a medium roast, supposedly. But, you know, if I looked at it, I was like, they're kind of dark. So who knows? Mostly dark, except there's like some decent medium and light in there as well.
I can't wait to try it, man. It sounds like an interesting experience, at least. So
anyway, that's mine. How about you? What have you been up to in coffee lately?
Not much. I mean, you know, for our audience, we're recording a week after our last episode recording. So I really haven't had a chance to delve into much. The only thing, I guess, that I want to correct from what I said last time, I was talking about the coffee that I had gotten from the coffee drops, but I mentioned Pull and Pour. I was mistaken. This coffee that I got from Brandywine was actually through the Fellow, which is a similar subscription, or not subscription, but, you know, drop services to the Pull and Pour. They just come on different days, but the concept is still the same. But aside from that, that's about it, man. I mean, I've been still enjoying the coffee. I probably have just a couple of cups left of that one. I finished my, what's that country that I mentioned last time?
Yemen. That was
I finished my Yemeni coffee yesterday or 2 days ago. So I was pretty bummed about that. So I'm actually getting to the point where I'm almost through my coffee supply. So I'm going to be about ready to reactivate the trade subscription and get some new coffees. So yeah, man, not a lot of interesting stuff for me.
The Yemeni coffee, I know, has been like one of your favorites.
Yeah, it was pretty great. I miss it already. it was a small jar of coffee. So I knew it wasn't gonna last me a while. I only made it when I knew I had enough time in my hands to like brew it properly, just so that I wouldn't rush through it and I got to enjoy it. So yeah, but that was about it. I still have some left from my last subscription order. That's another Ethiopian coffee. I have a lot of Ethiopian coffee in my life right now. I have like 3 or 4 Ethiopian coffees. Yeah.
That's not a bad problem to have. About the small jar size, not specifically about, this isn't specifically about like the Yemeni coffee, but I've noticed that maybe we're dealing with some shrinkflation in terms of coffee, because the sizes of the bags that I've seen in the stores now, they're like a weird 10.5 ounce versus what used to be just 12. Like I used to just see a bunch of 12s, a bunch of 16s, maybe some like 20 ounce bags, right, for bigger ones. But I've been seeing weird 10.5. Maybe I saw sizes. And they're roughly the same price. So I definitely feel like there's some, you know, granted, companies have to do what they have to do to keep the revenue and profits, etc. But it was just kind of jarring to me, the number of weird to me. Right. I'm not an expert, but still weird to me that I'm seeing a bunch of 10.5 ounce bags that I think used to be 12 ounce bags or, you know, something along those lines.
Yeah. The only thing that I could think of is if it comes from a roaster or packager that typically does it in metric units. So their machines may be set to a certain metric standard, which roughly translates to a weird number of ounces. I've had that before, you know, where they tell me like how many grams and I'm like, how many ounces is that? So, but that's the only one. I've also seen it a few times with like higher end coffees where you may pay 20 bucks, but you're going to get like an 8 ounce bag instead of a 12 ounce bag or a 6 ounce bag. There's come in different sizes. Honestly, when it comes to higher end coffees that would otherwise be really expensive, I kind of appreciate that smaller packaging because it makes it still affordable, right?
Sure.
You're not going to get as much bang for your buck, but you're definitely at least going to be, you're not going to have to like, you know, go to your piggy bank to figure out, borrow money to buy a bag of exotic coffee.
Yeah. That might be, you know, that might be one of the benefits of if like a bunch of your friends are into trying new kinds of coffee, et cetera, that it might be worth pooling your money together to buy something, you know, kind of unique. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And splitting it because besides the cost, I think there's also, you can kind of spread the amount of coffee that's there as well. So it's not just you trying to go through whatever 16 ounces or something along those lines. I think we've talked about this before. We just haven't gotten around to actually like chipping in. I wish there was a way to do that. That'd be kind of helpful.
Yeah. I love that aspect of like sharing the coffee. And we do that, right? I have a new coffee friend at work. And he'll share his coffee with me and I'll share my coffee with him a couple of times already. And we've talked about our friend Luis. Every time I have a good coffee that I mentioned to him, I bring it to work if I wasn't planning on doing so already. And I tell him, hey, you know, come get some of this coffee, and he'll show up and we'll just make a coffee together and spend some time. So hopefully he's still listening. I think he is. So we'll see. We'll see if he sends me a message telling me that we gave him a shout out.
Yeah. Wait, is Luis the new coffee friend you were talking about?
No. There's somebody else at work as well who I realized is also very into coffee.
Wow. Just, wow. I leave the company and you start making new coffee friends. That's,
well, you know.
That's what we've been up to with coffee lately.
All right. So before we get started, let me do a quick plug. Please don't forget to give us a follow in Instagram at coffee.break.podcast. Or if you want to visit our website, please visit us at coffeebreakpod.com. That's where you can access all the notes from this episode, links and stuff like that. And also where you can access all the old episodes that we've released. And last but not least, if you're listening to us in Apple Podcasts or any one of those platforms that allow you to leave a comment or a rating, please leave us a 5-star rating if you're enjoying the content that we're bringing to you. That would help us a ton. Or if you have any comments or suggestions, feel free to leave them. We do check that every now and then, and we'd love to hear what questions or comments you have. But I guess with all that said, let's get on with our episode. You want to get us started?
In this episode, we're talking about diving into specialty, and this kind of touches a little bit on some of the stuff we talked about in Beans for Beginners, which was roughly episode 2 to 4-ish. So there are going to be some similarities, but this will be a bit more focused on the items that you need to have more control to really get the best or the most out of your specialty coffee, if that's the route that you're taking. So we're going to be talking about some more complex methods of making coffee. And in Beans for Beginners, we talked a fair amount about the mocha pot and the French press, which we're probably not going to cover those quite as much this time. Actually, we're not going to cover those this time because they're just not as common or prominent in specialty coffee brewing as far as our experiences go.
Yeah, you know, the mocha pot specifically gives you very little control. Because you have zero temperature control. Yes, you can mess with the grind size, but I don't know like what kind of result that would have. So, you know, you have to essentially use boiling or close to boiling water in order to do that. So if you're using a darker roast, that may result in something very stringent and bitter and so on and so forth. So I guess the goal here is to give you a little bit more control, you know, so that you can get some more of those qualities. Kind of the same thing for French press, right? I think you can mess with the temperature, and I guess you can do different steep times, but I don't think people like really mess with that too much. I don't know. I'm down to be corrected. If someone knows someone who's done like French press championships, then I'm curious about it.
There's a championship for everything out there. So maybe there is, but I've not personally seen a French press championship. Personally, I find the French press to be kind of like a set it and forget it situation typically. So it's not one that I focus on where, you know, I'm not thinking about control when I'm making a French press coffee. I'm just making coffee. So
exactly.
Yeah. I think control is definitely one of the focuses, or more control over, say, temperature and other elements for brewing coffee is pretty key for specialty or just, you know, better coffee in general.
Yeah. Also, in Beans for Beginners, we were a little focused on budget, at least the first episode of that series, right? I think it was Coffee on a Budget. And this one, I mean, we're not going to try to break the bank at all, but you can definitely go into a very expensive range if you go down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit where we think, based off of our own experiences, that you could get like a decent specialty coffee setup or gear for specialty coffee for like $100 to $150 perhaps, but that would be like the more or less like the absolute low end to have enough control to really get the best out of your specialty coffee.
Yeah, and it really depends. And again, I've said this before, right? You get to a point where you have like the diminishing returns, where the more you spend doesn't necessarily proportionately result in increased quality. But you may also see an increase in your workflow and all those kinds of things. Those are all things to consider, and it depends how much all that is worth to you. So I'm not going to tell you what's right or what's wrong. After all, coffee is, or we're about coffee without judgment, right? So we're not trying to judge what's more important to you, the budget, the workflow, whatever.
Yeah, it makes sense. Well, anyway, so if we're not talking about mocha pot and French press as we did in Beans for Beginners, what type of brew methods would we be talking about, Jose?
All right. So we have not covered this one at all. And I think we did say in Beans for Beginners that we weren't, because it was a little more complex thing. And, you know, being Beans for Beginners, we didn't want to go into something as complex as this because it can be intimidating. But the pour over is a method that is very common in specialty coffee or more advanced coffee brewing. You have competitions for pour over. You have the Brewer's Cup, which is a, you know, very important, almost equivalent to the Barista Championships. So there's definitely a lot of energy behind that method of brewing. But pour over is just a method. And behind that method, there are a ton of gadgets that you can go with, right? You've probably seen it all over your social media feed. People use all kinds of things.
So maybe one of those pour over methods that you're suggesting would be like Chemex?
Yeah, the Chemex is actually a very good introductory one. I don't know from a ease of use standpoint if it's easier to use, but the Chemex has a lot of appeal because it's a very good looking brewer, right? It's got the wooden handle and the leather strap and everything. You'll see it a lot in social media feeds because it's just an attractive brewer for people to use. That was actually the first pour over coffee that I ever tried when we went to Land of a Thousand Hills, and about 2 years ago, my wife finally got me one, and that was actually my very first pour over device. It just takes a little bit of getting used to understanding how the recipes work, you know, blooming your coffee and the drawdown times and playing with your grind sizes and water temperatures and all those kinds of things. It's not as simple as just like, hey, you know, put some coffee here, use this grind size, and then just kind of set it and forget it. But the Chemex does vary in price quite a bit. It can start around $40. I think that's for the 3-cup brewer. And they go all the way up to about $55 for their biggest one, which I believe is 10 cups. But when they say cups, I'm not really sure what size cups they're talking about. I'm pretty sure pretty tiny cups. So
yeah. No, they'd have to be based off the look of it. The Hario V60, the plastic version. So the Chemex is, you know, let's say $55 on the high end. The Hario V60, the plastic version, we found to be $9 or $10. So this would be an easy way, or at least an easy option, to start doing some specialty coffee or taking care of your specialty coffee on a budget.
Yeah, absolutely. This is their little one, right? And their slightly bigger one is what, $12.50? You had found out earlier.
Yeah, huge difference. Like
This is for their plastic, but I mean, plastic is actually potentially better than ceramic because it holds the heat a lot better. It's not as conducive. So when you're trying to gain control of your brew, that's actually a really good thing. Having a plastic brewer, sure, it doesn't look as fancy, it doesn't look as Instagrammable, but at the end of the day, it's actually a darn good device. And there's a reason why Hario is such a synonymous with pour over. It's the second pour over device that I ever had after the Chemex. Something to note, I guess, that differentiates the Chemex versus the Hario is that the Chemex does have an integrated carafe with it. Whereas with the Hario, you would either be brewing directly on top of your mug or cup. But if you want to do it for multiple people, you would have to get their little server that they sell, or some sort of server or pitcher that you can use for storing or brewing larger amounts of coffee and then pouring onto smaller cups. But that's just a small note. I don't recall how expensive the little glass server is, but I don't recall it being too expensive. You know, we'll kind of just to speed it up here, there's a lot of options. The Aurea V3, I've talked about that. That's kind of the newest one to my lineup. That one's about $44. That one has a flat base, so it's just a little bit different than the Chemex and the Hario. The Clever Dripper is kind of an interesting one. There are good videos on how to use the Clever Dripper. Kalita Wave is another one. I've talked about that on my Christmas list last year. That's one that that is also very ubiquitous in the pour over game. And then you have the Origami Dripper, which is arguably probably one of the best looking drippers out there. They're colorful, they're beautiful, and they can fit all kinds of filters. Those are about $50 to $55. But then, if you really, really want to get into the expensive range, you can go with something like the Pure Over, which is a full glass setup. You have a glass carafe and a glass brewer, and the brewer itself has little holes, so you actually don't need filters. The Pure Over comes in at $90. So that's a lot of money compared to all the other ones we discussed that were sub 50. And then last but not least, the Fellow Stag, Also, another really interesting brewer, that one comes in around $80. So, like we said, you can go in as low as $9, or you can go as high as $90. So that's a 10 times price increase. What do you think, Christian?
I've not seen the fellow stag myself, but I think one of the selling points for the pure over is that it's all glass, right? Like, you don't use a paper filter in that.
That's
one.
Right. Yeah. That right?
Okay, got it. Maybe that justifies, because you have like the additional pieces, maybe. Big maybe that justifies a $90 price tag. We're not as opposed to expensive coffee gear on this podcast. We both have some like relatively expensive coffee gear. But sometimes you just kind of look at something and you just have to be a little bit skeptical about, especially these days, because anyone, I don't want to suggest that these companies that we've talked about are doing that. But, you know, there are companies out there that can be made, or sorry, that sell, you know, not really the best quality stuff. So you just got to be careful. But I think that the pure over sounds really interesting, especially because there's no paper filters, right? You're not throwing that stuff away every single time you make coffee. You just have the glass bits.
Yeah. One thing I do wonder about the pure over is how that workflow is, because one of the cool things about all the other drippers is that you can easily just walk over to your trash can, lift the filter with your fingers, and just poop, plop it into your trash. With the pure over, I would imagine it's going to be similar to a French press situation where you're kind of scooping grounds out of the out of the brewer.
Yeah, I think
but
so.
But it's beautiful. It's Yeah.
That's like my least favorite part about having the French press is having to get rid of the grounds that way. And I've not found like a good way to do that just yet. So
one thing to talk about when you talk about all these pour over devices is filters. You can't forget about the filters. You need filters to brew. And unlike the AeroPress, for example, these brewers typically don't come with filters already included, other than the pure over, which is, you know, a filter in itself. So just a few pointers before you go buy your pour over device and your filters. Make sure you get the right kind of filters. Some of the brewers use a conical style filter. Some of the other brewers use a flat bottom style filter. They kind of look like a little basket. So you just got to know what your brewer accommodates. But some drippers actually do accommodate both types. For example, the origami dripper. So that's kind of a good reason to have one of those. And then the last thing is just making sure you get the right size. So for example, many of these drippers come in different sizes. So you just got to make sure you're getting filters that are going to fit the dripper itself. So the other one, and you may have noticed that we didn't leave it out intentionally, was the AeroPress. And I don't know how much we need to talk about the AeroPress, because we talk about it a lot. I personally talk about it a lot, and I happen to own a lot. So Christian, do you want to kind of talk about the AeroPress real quick and just get us going to the next portion?
Yeah, I'm not really sure what there is to say about the AeroPress, especially for this podcast. Because if we're not talking about the AeroPress every episode, I'd be surprised if people weren't already aware of what it is. But maybe when you look at it from like a specialty coffee perspective, there's a lot of benefits to having the AeroPress besides the easy cleanup, which we talked about just recently with the French press and potentially the pure over. So the cleanup is one. Clearly, it's got the paper filter, so it works. Not too unlike the pour overs, and you do have a fair amount of control, right? Because of if you have the kettle and all that stuff. I think it just kind of works out for specialty, as well as just maybe not specialty coffee, if that's the direction that you're taking.
Yeah, exactly. If you're wondering why the AeroPress is the only one that made it into this list, it's because of the control. The AeroPress, you can go with upright brewing, you can go with inverted brewing, you can bloom your coffee, you can kind of like let some of the coffee seep through and then pour more, or you can do like partial, like pressing at different rates. All that affects the flavor of your AeroPress. You can let it steep for 10 minutes. You can let it steep for 1.5 minutes, which is what I typically do. The possibilities are almost endless with the AeroPress. And voila, there is an AeroPress World Championship, which we've talked about. So all these methods that we've talked about so far, there's some sort of competition for them.
Yeah.
Because you can control so many variables and have such a different result.
Yeah, and also the AeroPress is not crazy expensive. If I remember correctly, we said
$35-$40.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a decade ago that we bought our AeroPresses, and they were the same price back
30.
Then. Yeah, roughly the same price. So it is a good gadget.
and super portable. Love it. So the other one that we did talk about earlier in Coffee for Beginners was coffee machines. Do you want to kind of talk about coffee machines and what's the deal with those in specialty?
So we had talked about a coffee machine that may be on the higher end, but I'd say generally the coffee machines that you see out there don't give you enough control with temperature. And perhaps even like amount of fluid that's running through to give you the best experience with your specialty coffee. At least that's my take. I've not had a drip coffee machine at home, but I've had friends that have them. I know Jose has a Ninja that he loves. But I just don't think you don't typically have the control with a regular drip coffee machine to really get what you need to deal with specialty coffee. One the example that I talked about, that Jose and I talked about previously, is the Mocha Master, where it is a high-end machine. I think we saw it for like $400. But based off of what I read online, and this is just my take, being very honest, I don't have one. I've never tried one, but I'd love to try one someday. It just doesn't seem like the temperature control is accurate enough for specialty coffee. But it looks interesting.
Yeah. You know, I may have to eat my words, but I don't see myself going and shelling out $350, $400 for a Mocha Master. But that's just me. I would probably just rather get a really good grinder, hand grinder or something like that for the same price.
Yeah.
You mentioned we do have a coffee machine in our house. My wife does use it regularly every day. We have the Ninja hot and cold brew system. That machine was about $150 when we bought it, and that's with the glass carafe, or you can get it with the metal carafe. I want to say it was like $190, but we had some coupons and we got it 20% off. The deal with that machine, or what I've noticed it doing, it uses conical filters. But what I like about the machine, and I do have to say, it does make much better coffee that, you know, say, for example, a $30 Hamilton Beach coffee maker from Walmart or something like that. But what I've seen it does is has some sort of mechanism that stops the brew. So kind of like a clever dripper or your Hario switch, Christian, where it actually pours water and lets it sit for a little bit, and then it opens the mechanism and lets it drip through. And then it'll close the mechanism, and then it'll drip more water, and then, you know, eventually open it back up and let it drip through. It does that a few times, and I want to say it does have an effect on the resulting cup of coffee that you're making. Maybe one of these days I'll put some coffee in the coffee machine, and then I'll make some with the pour over and see if I can tell them apart. But again, I mean, this is $150, $190. Mocha Masters, $350. I don't know if it's worth that investment unless you really don't have the 5 minutes that it takes to make pour over every morning. Or if you're making for large batches, obviously it makes sense. But if it's just for you, I would probably say start on the cheap end.
Yeah. No, I think that would be part of the point of this series is for people who are trying specialty coffee beans. So I don't know if it's necessary yet to immediately, if you're just getting into it, dive into something that's $400 like this. So totally agree that there's maybe better options, but there's also the aesthetic of the Mocha Master, which personally I like. I mean, the price tag doesn't really justify it, but it still looks pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree. It's a very nice looking machine. What about espresso? Can we fit this in the conversation and not make it an espresso for beginners?
I think we all assume that espresso and specialty kind of go together. So I don't know what there is to say about espresso here that would be different, maybe.
Yeah, the only thing is one of the big things with specialty is the single origin type coffees or lighter roasted coffees. And for most people who have drunk an espresso throughout their life, say from either Starbucks or from any other place that does more traditional Italian espresso, is that the roast is typically going to be darker. So in this case, if you're going with something, say, for example, Ethiopian, I'm kind of stuck on that origin right now, or let's just change it up, Panamanian coffee, and it's going to be a lot lighter roasted potentially, and you're going to have a lot of different flavors in your espresso shot, which is, it might be a little funky the first time because you're used to that dark roasty flavor, and that one's kind of going to be a little wild. So that one I would probably say, if you do it, maybe slowly ease yourself into it. I don't know if taking a plunge from dark roast into light roast would be very enjoyable.
I've done that plunge. Personally, I've not found it very enjoyable. So I agree. More, if you're moving more into specialty, you're hopefully or probably doing more medium dark, medium light roasts. And with the espresso machines, I think you have to be careful that you have the right temperature set up, because you're not going to be using the same temperature for a dark. At least you shouldn't be. Not that you can, but maybe it's better for the flavor of the coffee to use a slightly different temperature than you normally would with a dark roast. So yep.
It's easy to get a acidic shot. I guess we can't talk about pour over without talking about kettles, because one of the things about pour over is the control. And in order to have that control, you need a kettle that's up for the task. You want to talk about kettles a little bit?
I'm actually the worst person to talk about kettles between the two of us, because I have a not so great gooseneck kettle here. It's a bottom brand. I really should learn how to pronounce that, considering we do a coffee podcast. But anyway, we got it from Target. It was probably like $60 or $70 at the time. It definitely doesn't have the temperature control that I would want, but it's kind of worked for our purposes here at home. So I continue to use it. And typically the water just gets super hot. And if I'm trying to be careful with the temperature, if I'm actually trying to do something with specialty using that kettle, then I'll have to wait a little bit to let it cool down. So that's my experience. I think the gooseneck does help when I'm doing pour over, to be able to like cover all of the beans with the right amount of water and not like pour too much, etc. So that part is helpful.
Yeah. You know, I think the one thing that we have in common is that we both have gooseneck kettles. And I think that's what we need to say here, right? For pour over brewing, you need that type of control with a gooseneck kettle, because it allows you to kind of drip the water a little bit slowly, and gives you controls over how quickly you're pouring the water over your coffee. Depending on the kettle, you're going to have different flow rates or how well the water flows. James Hoffman actually did a really good review comparing a bunch of different temperature control gooseneck kettles. He talks about all these things. So we're going to link it in the show notes so y'all can go take a look at that. I don't want to summarize that on his behalf. But like Christian said, the prices can vary a lot. You said yours was about $60.
Yeah.
I got a fellow Stag EKG, and that one nowadays costs $165. I'm going to tell you how I got mine. I was playing fantasy football, and I happened to win that season, and I used the winnings from my fantasy football to buy my kettle. So there you go.
There you go. If you're doing specialty on a budget, get into some fantasy football and you know, yeah, feed your addiction that way.
But anyhow, you don't have to buy the most expensive one. If you really wanted to just have the control of the gooseneck kettle, you can get a stovetop gooseneck kettle. And like Christian said, just kind of heat it up and use a thermometer to measure the temperature of the water. I've seen a lot of cafes do that. They have a little hot water dispenser and they grab one of those, you know, metal Hario stovetop kettles, and they just fill it up with 200 degree water or whatever, and then they use that for brewing your coffee. So it doesn't have to be fancy. I think it just has to give you some degree of control to get started. But go check out the video and hopefully that'll help you make a decision.
Yeah. And, you know, if you're talking about specialty, you're probably talking about scales as well. But this is actually one of my favorite things to talk about when it comes to gear for coffee, because you definitely don't need a super expensive scale. And I've seen some crazy ones on Amazon that are like $200, but pretty normal one that you can get from just about anywhere for like $10-$15 works, I would say, just as well as anything that's like super crazy expensive. How much is your scale at home, Jose?
Mine is $14 from Amazon.
Mine was like $15 from Kroger, and I didn't even buy it. My father-in-law was just like, hey, do you need a scale? And I said, yeah, sure, why not? And it works pretty well. So, you know, it says it's got units that you can switch out, so you can read to grams if that's what you need to do. And that's what most people typically do for specialty, is in grams. So it's good. You can buy an expensive one, but these other ones that are not so expensive work just as well.
I think as long as it gives you 10th of grams, like, you know, whatever 0.1 should be good enough for what you're doing. I have another one that gives me like whole grams, but that one I kind of lose control because it moves really slowly. So yeah, the expensive ones do the same basic job, right? They measure the weight of whatever you're doing, but they do have additional features. Some have built-in timers on them. Some are built specifically for pour over. Some are built specifically for espresso. and they kind of help you time your shot, or they help you time your brew and all those kinds of things as soon as, you know, it senses a change in weight or something like that. So they can get smart or a little smart. But man, I don't know. I'm still not too convinced to spend $200 on a scale.
Right.
I would like one if someone gave it to me for free, but I'm still not ready to go shell that kind of money.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe for Christmas. I know you want to get a rocket appartamento before you do all these other things. So got to save up for that for sure.
Yes. Hoping to get that in a month or two.
We'll see. Oh, wow. Okay. Anyway, so if we're talking about, you know, weighing the beans with a scale, you're probably also going to be talking about a grinder, right, Jose?
Yeah. We talked about it again in Beans for Beginners, so we're not going to go into it too much. We talked about getting a burr grinder. Don't get a blade grinder. You don't have any control when it comes to blade grinders because it's just a function of how long you grind it for. So you can really turn your coffee into powder, or you can have big chunks of coffee and sometimes a little bit of both. So go get yourself a burr grinder. However, you can't get two different ones. You can get a manual or electric grinder. Manual grinders start around $60 for a decent one. Timor has the Chestnut C2. That's about $60. I have the EasyPresso JX. That one is $129. And which one do you have, Christian?
I have a Java Presso, maybe is the brand, and it wasn't expensive. Mm-hmm. It was like $30. It does its job well enough. You know, it's not as good as the JX, but if you're just getting into it, I think, you know, something relatively inexpensive like the Java Presso is a good start.
Started.
Yeah. At least then you can kind of get a sense of what the difference is.
That's also what I got started with. And I'll say, you know, taste aside, I mean, at the end of the day, they both made coffee, but the user experience on the EasyPresso, it took me 30 seconds to grind the coffee versus 3 minutes that it used to take me with the Java Press one.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, if that's not important to you, start cheaper. You don't have to go break the bank.
Yeah, the Java Press is definitely like a workout if you just need, like, you know, 20 grams or something for your coffee.
Yeah. What about electric grinders?
The electric burr grinder that I'm using now is the Breville Smart Grinder Pro, and I really enjoyed that. I don't remember what my previous one was. It was probably just some sort of like no name brand from Amazon, but it worked pretty well. And that one was like maybe like $100 or something, maybe $50, something along those lines. It wasn't super expensive, but the Smart Grinder Pro is definitely better in terms of control. I feel like I have way more control with this one than my last one. But I know you've got some nice grinders though, right?
Yeah, you know, electric grinders is another area where you can pick your poison as far as how expensive you go. And yes, there are improvements. It's going to make a difference. But again, diminishing returns, right? You get to a certain point where the grinder is not going to do as much for you. I personally also have the Smart Grinder Pro, which is about $200. I like it a lot. It has a good range because you can go really coarse for French press, or you can go really fine for espresso. Or even finer than that. So that's a good thing, right? Having a kind of jack of all trades grinder that allows you to do all the stuff that we talked about above. I also have the Niche Zero. That one is sold in the UK, and that's about £500, which as of today, that would be about $605. But I actually only use that for espresso just because I don't want to mess with the dial setting. So that I don't have to, like, you know, redial in my beans every time I use it. So that's the only thing. There's other ones. Baratza Anchor. It's a very popular one for people getting started. That's about $170. And the Fellow Ode is a very good looking, very hardworking grinder for $250. So if you want to just go a little above, maybe spruce up your coffee bar because it does look really good. You can go way up. You can go into the thousands if you really want to. But again, for what we're talking about here, if you're just getting into it, I don't know if the juice is worth the squeeze.
Yeah. So, you know, we've talked quite a bit about the high-end stuff. We know there's some more budget-friendly options for diving into specialty. Between, let's say, with the Hario V60 plastic option, maybe, like the Java Presso $30 hand grinder, like a $15 scale from Kroger. I feel like you could probably get a decent early specialty coffee gear setup for like $100 ish, right?
Yeah, I think you could. I think $100 is a good starting point.
Oh, I missed the kettle. Yeah, sorry, I missed the kettle.
Oh, but yeah.
The kettle would be probably one of the more expensive things that you would buy with like your budget because of the temperature control that you need. So definitely not the kettle that I have. It's not terrible, but you would be spending some time waiting around for the right temperature. So you're probably better off spending, I don't know, a little bit more to get something that has better temperature control.
So is that like if you were just getting started, or if I was just getting started, what would you tell me to go get?
Yeah, I'd actually be okay with the Hario V60, whichever, the O2. Is the O2 the one that's like $12?
Yeah, the O2.
Yeah.
A little bigger.
Random scale from somewhere, probably from Kroger. I don't know if I would get the Javapresso. It's just a lot of effort that might be like deterrent for making coffee, because it is a bit of a workout because it's relatively small. The diameter for the Javapresso, at least the one that I have, is small compared to like the JX that you have. So that might be one issue with it. But because it's $30, you know, and if you really like on a budget, then it does work for the needs of coffee making. And then maybe for the kettle, I'm really struggling with this because the $50 or whatever, $70 kettle that I have does work, right? It's just, as a person who's used it enough times, it's not what I would use, you know? So, but also the option that we've talked about, the Fellows Stag, is like a bit expensive, $165.
Yeah, it's just such a high price point.
Yeah, I think the kettle definitely should be, of these things, the kettle should be the more expensive thing that you choose. But I'm sure there's an option out there that's like close to $100, maybe just slightly under $100, that isn't, that does allow pretty good temperature control.
Yeah, I agree with you. Unless you really care about the aesthetic and you really love how the EKG looks, I would recommend getting something cheaper to get started with.
Yeah.
And then you can eventually get into that. It's quite a bit of money. I mean, if you have the money and you want to spend it, go for it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm kind of maybe on the same boat. I've been debating between the Hario V60O2, which is, like you said, $12, or the Aurea V3, but that one's $44. The Aurea V3 is very forgiving. I've come to find out. And it looks really good as well. And it's just a little bit different because it has the flat bottom, to where you just get a bit different experience there. But yeah, I would probably go with either one of those two. For the grinder, I would probably tell you to go with something like the EasyPresso JX 130. Maybe I'm a little biased because that's what I have and I enjoy it. But again, I haven't reviewed every single grinder there is out there. That's what Lance Hedrick is for, because he reviews all the, or, you know, he has touched almost every grinder out there. And then definitely a cheapo scale from Amazon to get started. Just make sure it measures in tenths of a gram. And then, yes, $100 kettle. I wouldn't have an issue with something cheaper.
Sounds like you could dive into specialty with roughly $100 to $200, which it can be a lot of money. But if it's something that you do every day and you enjoy trying more specialty, then it could be worth it.
Yeah. And if you have the AeroPress already, you can skip a lot of these things.
Oh, yeah.
And then just go buy really good coffee and get started with that, which is what we're going to cover in our next episode.
Nice.
How to buy better coffee, specifically specialty type stuff. So, all right. Well, now that we've kind of ran the clock for quite a bit, let me remind you one more time. Please don't forget to give us a follow on Instagram at coffee.break.podcast. Or if you want to visit our website, please visit us at coffeebreakpod.com. That's where you can access all the links from today's episode, which I suspect will be quite a few links. or you can also listen to older episodes and older links, look at older links. And then last but not least, if you're listening to us in Apple Podcasts or one of those platforms where you can leave a rating or review, please leave us a rating or review. If you're liking what we're bringing to you, a 5-star rating would help us out a bunch. But we would like to hear your thoughts. But with all that said, please don't forget to keep trying and trying to make, find, and buy better coffee. And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Bye, everybody.
It's gonna make it to the
to the bloopers. The
blooper reel. Yeah, this is us recording at 9 o'clock on a Sunday.
I don't know if it's worth, if the juice is worth the squeeze.
What is,
you never heard that before?
I've never heard, and I've lived in Texas for a long time, just as you have, and I've never heard a saying like the juice is worth the squeeze. That sounds kind of vulgar. Okay, so that's.
Do you have anything else you want to cover?
I don't.